Blog Talk Radio.
Green Talk Live and more. With the shot for beer. This is Green Talk Live, you are now in tune. You ain't locked in yet, then you will be soon. Put your thinking caps on, this is intellectual. Moses never been, but go deep in the thick of vegetables. This is shots, the form of the speakers who want to crush. Knowledge is power, meaningful topics getting the trust. Nobody brings it like the shots, throw the towel out. Here's the number for your phone so you can dial out. 347-838-9540, don't call too late. Cause you don't want to miss all the action. Speaking with passion, pick up for the show like Bill Paxton. Expand your horizons, open your mind. Had a hard, long day, come and have a good time. Have an opinion to share? Call in and let it go. Welcome all, it's Real Talk Radio.
Hey, Screen Talk Live and more.
On this Real Talk Radio with the Chef.
I'm Chef Moses.
And I'm Chef Rivera. Welcome to our 10th show. What does people talk to them tonight? Today, we're going to be focusing on micro-local food systems and its trends. People across the countries in the United States are taking more control of their food systems, their local food systems, by supporting locally grown food. Roughly to date, 82% of the American populace eats organic produce. So people are tired of, you know, processed foods. The American public is tired of getting sick from eating and drinking things that aren't good for them, and they're taking charge as they rightfully should. It's a human right that should not be hampered or diverted in any way. We're going to be concentrating on that topic. And what is a food system?
You said, what is a food system? A lot of us, I think, are aware of what a food system is, but what we're dealing with today is a local micro food system. You know, semantics and euphemisms.
Yeah.
Local micro food systems is a word, is a term that you are going to be hearing. If you really, a lot of people haven't really heard about it yet to a large degree, the major populace, but it is going to be something that is going to be a word.
A worldwide trend.
A worldwide trend. Local micro food systems. So, in the course about the next
5 years,
in the next 3 years,
trajectory,
you're going to really start hearing about more about local food systems, locally grown food
by urban farmers,
right,
inner city farmers,
right. It's something that people know about and have heard, but the micro is meaning there are going to be clusters.
Mm-hmm.
Of small, independently ran farms, gardens, and the like.
Mm-hmm.
And there are going to be new things too added to that as we progress into this locally micro food system. Just to say this, what's so sad is that the majority of our food that is grown is exported
right.
to other countries. This is how America makes its money.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what needs to be changed, it should have been changed a long time ago,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, money dictates what makes the world go round to a large degree. But it's coming back to something where it could have been rectified a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
I really, truly believe that this is something that everyone needs to be a part of. It's going to be very trendy. It's very trendy now,
right?
But it's going to be a necessity.
It is a necessity now,
but more so, it's going to be a necessity very, very, very soon. We're going to be pit against a lot of obstacles
Right.
Especially with our weather, with our climate,
mm-hmm.
with the climate change and all of these things. Perfect example, it is now spring, but it still feels like winter.
In our part of the world.
From what we're gathering, the information that we're getting is that the weather is crazy all over the globe to a large degree.
Very unstable, very scary. In the Rockaway Peninsula, as you already know, if you don't know, we'll tell you, we're an oceanfront property community, where we're roughly about maybe 2-3 blocks away from the Atlantic coast, and then behind us we have Jamaica Bay. Around this time of the year, it's usually 65, 70 degrees. It's going to be 65 tomorrow, hopefully, but with that there's going to be some rain. Very uncommon. It's been very sporadic, and, you know, it slowed us down as farmers ourselves. Now, the landscape of the Rockaway Peninsula is changing as far as sustainability and food justice and security for the first time in decades. There's roughly 6 urban farm community gardens prototypes being built as we speak, including the Farm Rockaway Project, which will be concentrating on the micro-local food concept where urban farmers, especially from local areas, the Rockaways, of course. Most of those gardens will be run by Rockaway residents, such as ourselves. But there's also going to be several partnerships from Brooklyn that's coming into the fold, that's assisting in the food justice and food security movement, which is an excellent thing. So us as a small community are taking charge and control. And us doing what we've been doing for so long and for years promoting the farmers markets and for years promoting the community support agriculture programs.
The food movement overall.
The food movement overall, it's good to see that the advocacy that we did from going to the east and the west is being
adhered to,
and it's proliferated. There's a momentum coming, and it's good. And, you know, everybody can share in that movement. The next step after that is to have people grow themselves, have their little gardens. I hear a lot of people in the Rockaways are growing in their backyards, utilizing their spaces, and creating their own
local
micro-food systems.
Because the majority of the people that we talk to that are growing and that are, there's so many newbies that are getting into
and new foodies
that are getting into this whole food movement,
right?
This good food movement. It's just amazing of the number of people that have come up to us just this growing season coming in. During the winter time, there were a lot of conversations, a lot of talk about growing and learning how to plant from a lot of residents out here in the Rockaways, and I've seen an influx of people wanting to learn
mm-hmm.
how to grow
mm-hmm.
and, you know, grow to sustain. And everyone's talking about sustaining their families. That's
right.
The number one priority.
Right, and that's excellent.
Right, no, that is a very excellent thing. And it goes without saying that people are starting to realize and understand
the necessity
for food grown in their community. The history of local grown food, well, you know what, I'm going to let Chef Rivera get into that when she's when it's like designated time. Now we stop. But locally it is so important.
Mm-hmm.
This food, this good food revolution,
mm-hmm.
It empowers communities and it empowers people to actually make good choices and to actually be able to sustain
mm-hmm.
and bring employment into their community.
Right.
I was posed a question a long time ago. What is the most important, if anything was to happen, what would be the most important thing? And this question was posed to me by my father. And I pose this question every year to our new summer youth employees. Every year I pose this question to them. The question is, if something was to happen, what would be the two most important things in the world city at that particular time and moment? Actually, it's two parts to that question, but I ask them that, and sometimes I ask them, if something was to happen and it was a disaster, a natural disaster, and there was, you know, no way to get any water or food, what would you do? And what would be the most important thing?
Now, I already gave what was the answer?
The answer is food and water.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two most important things,
mm-hmm.
food and water. There's a necessity for both of these things. Our necessities are not at the moment.
Right.
It's not important right now.
Mm-hmm.
It is important to, you know, to our everyday needs, but we're not thinking of it like that.
Right.
We're thinking that it's going to be there forever and, you know, it'll never go anywhere and it'll never dry up. But if it does and that happens, then there's going to be a lot of chaos to
right.
a large degree.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, this food, this local food movement, this good food movement revolution is something that is well needed. I wanna say this too, real
mm-hmm.
quick. I wanna touch on this point because this is a portion and a part of the local micro food systems,
mm-hmm.
Tilapia. I have been hearing people saying that tilapia is a fish that is dirty, it's not supposed to be eaten. All of a sudden now, all of these things are coming to light. This is true to a degree. Depends on who is cultivating the fish.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on who is raising the fish. And it depends on what that individual is feeding the fish that makes it not safe.
Right.
If you have millions of fish in tanks, and all of these fish and your biofiltration systems and all of these things are not, if they're overloaded, then there's no way there's going to be ammonia and debris inside the water, and then you know the agro companies are going to have to put antibiotics into the water.
Right.
And this is where the fish are not, they're not good. But if you are apt enough to raise fish in a way that you can ammonia and all of the dung out of the water, that makes the environment safe for the fish. And it also depends on what the fish eat. If you're feeding them certain pellets and grains, then those are GMOs.
Mm-hmm.
Most grains is genetically
modified. Yep.
So if you're feeding, if you do not know how to make fish food and dispense this fish food yourself and add the oils and proteins and crude that needs to go into, and you can also actually, as a way of putting omega-3 fatty acids into the feed, which will make sure that the fish receive the omega-3 fatty acids that are essential and that are known for tilapia to have. Again, it all depends on who is raising the fish and how they're caring for the fish. Again, you're going to hear this a lot. If anyone knows anything about tilapia, they would know that they are omnivores. So that means that they actually eat plants. So the thing is, some fish farmers, they use these pellets as a way to increase the fat of the fish. But with the mixture of feces and ammonia from the urine that is in the water, it creates more of a inside the environment. The environment would be considered hostile and harsh.
Right.
So, again, like I said, everybody, you know, sometimes we get things and we go with what we got. But it's always good to do a little research before you say anything. Even if it is watching a Facebook video. I'm just saying, you know, sometimes even with videos or whatever the case is, you can just watch something and somebody will say something and then you'll just run with it. Unless you're apt to do some type of research and find out yourself, then you can see what it is for yourself. But the reason why they say it is because basically fish are being farmed, millions of fish on top of each other, and the waste cannot be disposed of correctly, so they're swimming with inside their own waste. But tilapia are a fish that love to be crowded. This is something that they are, when fish swim in schools, if you notice, a lot of fish swim in schools, but that's for protection, but that's something they do in general, though. So, like I said, I had to touch on that subject because it is a part of the local micro food systems.
Yeah.
And the thing is that I do not want to, I want to clarify, because there's a lot of stuff on Facebook and a lot of stuff on these social medias and in the newspaper about tilapia and about the farming of tilapia.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it is all true, but it is about the person and the individual's skill and knowledge to be able to bring those fish to fruition without antibiotics,
right,
and without GMO foods. So now, if the fish do not have GMO foods and antibiotics, those fish are perfectly fine for human consumption. That's just it. There's no ifs, ands, and buts, and, you know, there's no other sidebar argument about it. Like I said, I had to touch on that. Now, I'm going to let Chef Rivera get into the food systems and Chef Rivera.
Yeah. Thanks, Chef. Now, the term food system is used frequently in discussions about nutrition, food, health, community, economic development, and agriculture. Now, food system includes all processes and infrastructure involved in feeding a population. The growing, harvesting, processing, even packaging, transporting, marketing, consumption, and disposal of food and food-related items. It also includes the inputs needed and outputs generated at each of these steps. A food system operates within its influenced by social, political, economical, and environmental context. It also requires human resources that provide the labor, research, and education. Food systems are either conventional or alternative according to their model of food lifespan from origin to plate. Now, there's two types, as I just stated, the conventional food system and the alternative food system. The conventional food system is more so like what you see like in more rural areas. The alternative food system is more urban, like in a community garden setting or an urban farm setting.
Or metropolitan.
In a metropolitan area where it's more condensed and it's a whole lot smaller. Now, conventional food systems operate on the economies of scale. These food systems are geared towards a production model that requires maximum efficiency in order to lower consumer costs and increase overall production. And they utilize economic models such as vertical integration, economic specialization, and global trade. Now, the term conventional when describing food systems is largely part due to comparisons made to it by proponents of other food systems, collectively known as alternative food systems. So let me give you a brief history of conventional food systems. The development of food systems can be traced back to the origins of in-situ agriculture and the production of food surpluses. That's like the farms that we relatively know and understand. These surpluses enabled the development of settled areas and contributed to the development of ancient civilizations, particularly those in the Fertile Crescent. The system of trade associated with the exchange of foodstuffs also emerged in East Asia, North America, South America, Sub-Saharan Africa, with common commodities of exchange such as salt, spices, fish, grains, etc. So food systems basically was a concept from the beginning of time as the populace grew on Earth, that these kind of things were incorporated within different communities around the world. Through events in world history such as conquest of Alexander the Great, even the Crusades, the expansion of Islam, the journeys of Marco Polo, even that, and exploration and colonization of the Americans by Europeans led to the introduction and redistribution of new foods to the world at large, and food systems began to intermingle on a global scale. Now, after World War II, the advent of industrialized agriculture and more robust global trade mechanisms have evolved into the models of food production, presentation, delivery, and disposal that characterizes conventional food systems today. Now, the impacts of conventional food systems is lower food costs, which is the number one thing that's on people's minds. Now, when you have your organic produce department in your local grocery store
or bodega,
what I find is that it's so expensive, and it shouldn't be, and, you know, that's definitely changing. Everyone should be able to have accessibility to organic produce.
Yes.
By far. So that's definitely changing, and that's where the farmer's market, the farmer stands, the micro-local food systems, the alternative food systems come into play, because that particular system deals with the economic and the political and the sustainability component in a smaller way, in a smaller cluster of the populace. So,
but not to cut you off, mm-hmm. but I think what we need to do is cut out the political aspect.
I agree.
To each his own.
To a degree.
I mean, but if someone can find a way to, you know, work with the political sector and get what they need to get to do for the community, is a good thing. But I would take the latter road.
Yeah.
Which I decree the latter road as the high road,
right,
where
you have more freedom.
You have more freedom, but
you do
for yourself what you can appreciate more, and the people that you feed and produce this food for can appreciate you more to a large degree, because you don't change with the, you know, with the seasons.
Right.
It has to remain the same and to be the same. I just wanted to throw that in, Chef.
And sometimes too, with political influence, in my opinion, it takes a long time for the community outreach to take place because of the waiting for the funding, and, you know, it's just so bureaucratic. That's why we chose as an organization ourselves to stay
ultra grassroots,
because you know, you can go on the underground and get so much done. I mean, this has worked for us. We can't speak for anybody else.
Well, this will work for a whole, because
there's a lot of other organizations that had to do it, because sometimes people are scared of innovation. Sometimes people are, you know, they feel like you shouldn't be doing what you're doing, and, you know, the audacity. I mean, people get really emotional over something so simple as just growing food and just doing community outreach and then leaving it at that. And then when you leave it at that, people look at you, well, why are you leaving it at that? Well, perhaps maybe that's our mission statement, and that we want to do as we see fit with our mission statement. I mean, you know, everybody has an agenda, and everybody's, you know, agendas have different levels, and, you know.
It's cloak and dagger.
Yeah, it could be definitely cloak and dagger, but, you know, we've gotten so much done just doing this ultra grassroots for our, you know, from our experience. And it's been more beneficial for us and the community that we're doing the outreach to. That's just, you know, that's just from our experience. But
I'm really, truly, most of the people that you read about, without question, the great people that you read about, they always have done something. They had to do it first by themselves.
Right.
Without any assistance from any outside influences. But what's so funny is that those same people didn't really get all of that stuff done by themselves.
Right.
There were people that helped them.
That were key people.
That were key people in instituting what these other people saw and deemed fit to do. And these people said, you know what, I'm with that.
Mm-hmm.
And those that, believe it or not, those are really the unsung heroes. But I say they're not unsung to a degree because of the simple fact they always get the recognition that because it is between the individual and the people, because they understand that they are doing this not for they are unselfishly doing this for a just reason and cause.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's just enough to say, well, you know what, I don't have any food in my refrigerator. I do not have anything that I can, I need to volunteer. And, you know, a lot of this comes from people that do this. And there's some people that really don't need the food, and they just volunteer because it's a good cause.
Yeah.
So people have different, you know, I like to say this because my father used to always say, you know, when you say an agenda, that's like it has such a negative connotation to it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people, everyone has an agenda. Whether it's some people don't know it or not, they, oh, well, no, I just did this for, you know, this reason. Well, that's your agenda. You did it for this particular reason. But some people say, oh, I did it for this reason, and they really didn't do it for that reason, and they did it for greed or for gluttony or something else, and they're just not going to say it, but that's still an agenda. So the thing is that there are good agendas and there are bad agendas, and the thing is that we have to be vigilant and our acceptance of those agendas. The thing is, too, that's why there is conversation. My father used to always say, too, the art of conversation is a lost. The art of conversation, it's a lost art.
Right.
People used to sit down and really talk and be intellectual and really talk about things, as opposed to arguing and you know, getting a point across and asking a question without people thinking that you're asking this question and it's, you know, it's something deeper or it's something, the meaning is this, that, and the other. And no, it's not. But, you know, it's crazy. But, again, what we are doing, what we are, our hope is what we're doing is re-educating.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we, our goal is, to re-educate the, to help re-educate the populace and to make them understand how important it is to be self-sustainable.
Right.
This is something that is, you know, it is imperative to our future, our children's future. And we are not going to be able to depend on people forever.
Right.
We have to make, we have to make, and still, and still act honorable as men and women.
Right.
Without question.
Right.
Hold true to a belief and, you know, and just do what you're going to do. But, again, this is about teaching a populace, re-educating the populace on their food and how important it is. I know, again, you know, we talk about this in all of our shows. We've always said that, you know, everybody has a life and they're doing things, and people just do not take time out enough to appreciate things until it's gone. Then when it's gone, there's like a mad dash for cash. Like it's a mad world. There was an old movie a long time ago. It just shows you how crazy, you know, people can be over. But this is just, that was over money. But in general, food is going to be the same way.
Yeah.
This is going to be a form of, you know,
It's a trend.
Yeah, it's a trend, but it's going to be a new trend. But, you know, we're looking at people bartering and stuff like that. That is going to be the new trend. That's going to be one of the new trends, too. We're going to go back to bartering. We are already bartering, and there are people
to a large degree
that are bartering
across the country,
and they've been bartering for a long time. It's just that it hasn't been widespread to a large degree.
In clusters of communities around the country and around the world, especially in third world countries. I mean, that's how a lot of people eat, through bartering in third world countries. Because they don't have the money and the financial resources to purchase, so they barter. And what happens is in third world countries too, I'm going to touch on that topic a little later, they grow food and they share it with each other without money, without the concept of money being involved. But getting back to what I was talking about as far as the impacts of conventional food systems, lower food costs and greater food variety can be directly attributed to the involvement of conventional food systems. Agronomic efficiency is driven by the necessity to constantly lower production expenses, and those savings can be passed on to the consumer, which is the number one goal. Also, the advent of industrial agriculture and the infrastructure built around conventional food systems has enabled the world population to expand beyond its limitations. However, conventional food systems are largely based on the availability of inexpensive fossil fuels, which is necessary for a mechanized agriculture. The manufacture or collection of chemical fertilizers, the processing of food products, and the packaging of foods. Now, food processing began when the number of consumers started growing rapidly. The demand for cheap and efficient calories climbed, resulting in nutrition decline. Industrial agriculture, due to its reliance on the economies of scale to reduce production costs, often leads to the compromising of local, regional, or even global ecosystems through fertilizer runoff, non-point source pollution, and greenhouse gas emissions. Also, the need to reduce production costs in an increasingly global market can cause production of more lax, which are usually further from consumer markets. For example, the majority of salmon sold in the U.S. is raised off the coast of Chile, due in large part to less stringent Chilean standards. Regarding fish feed
standards?
Yeah.
So that means that it could be GMO feeds.
Yep.
All types of antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, it could be.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the less standards. The mm-hmm. standards are less. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. History has shown that if the standards are less, people are just not going to do the right thing. Not all people, but, you know, some people. It depends on their education. I'm not going to even say education. I take that back. Depends on their lifestyle and how they were raised.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, point blank.
Now, with that being said, less stringent Chilean standards regarding fish feed, and regardless of the fact that salmon are not indigenous in Chilean coastal waters, the globalization of food production can result in the loss of traditional food systems in less developed countries and have negative impacts on the population health, ecosystems, cultures in those countries. Now, this is my favorite. Alternative food systems really come from making it more local, making it organic, and making it more accessible to low-economic communities, especially in the United States, especially in the inner cities. It's being tapped now, but the momentum is speeding up on that movement. Now, with local food systems, are networks of food production and consumption that aim to be geographically and economically accessible and direct. They contrast to industrial food systems by operating with reduced food transportation and more direct marketing, leading to fewer people between the farmer and the consumer. And as a result, relationships that are developed in local food systems emerge from face-to-face interactions, potentially leading to a stronger sense of trust and social connectedness between the actors. Now, what we've done as Culinary Kids has built a relationship with the community and a level of trust. And the best way that we have done that is by having the food grown in a fashion where people can see that, where their food is coming from, what's being done to the food. Our food that we grow is not GMOs or F1s. When we do tours of our urban farm, you know, we show how we grow and what we grow with as far as
We don't use pesticides.
So the things that we use, like the herbicides and stuff like that, the things that we use are organic, and we buy them for organic from organic manufacturers, which are a lot smaller than
we'll
the conventional fertilizer, agri-core garden type of corporations, where it's more of a corporate thing as opposed to, you know, their whole thing is to make money. It's not about,
Or we'll make our own.
Right.
Or we will make our own organic insecticide.
Which we have. And, you know, it's very simple how we grow, and we incorporate that. And people come by and they see it and they want to come in because how beautiful everything looks. And, you know, that's how, you know, that's the number one way of building the trust between yourself and the consumer and locally, you know, with local residents where you're servicing. And they see how beautiful and you take care of what you have. And they want to, you know, they want to be part of that. So, you know, as far as this, you know, the best thing about local food systems that I see, too, is that there's a decreased distance of food transportation. You know, we have the farmer's market concept, the farm-to-table concept, where people come in and, you know, the food is there, the food has been picked, the food has been handled in a way that, you know, you see it, you can try it, and then, you know, you decide to take it home and you purchase it. So people feel more comfortable with that. And then also, too, with locally grown food, organically especially, the taste is a whole lot different. The cultivation is a whole lot different.
Not only is the taste different, what we do,
and people look forward to that.
They do, but sometimes what we do too is we leave the fruits and vegetables on the branch, and we allow our customers to pick the fruits and vegetables themselves.
And that gets them closer to the food, and that even gives a higher level of trust when you do things like that. And then they can pick it off, and they can taste it. And, you know, you make it an experience, especially in a metropolitan area. Granted, Rockaway, you know, is about to change. It's more commercially, unfortunately. But in the interim, it's still rural. And, you know, that people-to-people hand-to-hand contact is still very important to Rockaway residents. And sitting down and talking and, you know, getting to know someone and talking to someone and, you know, being in one's environment is still very important. So what we do is, you know, we invite people to come in and to sit and to look and to smell the grass and to smell the herbs. All those things are very important, and it's just a nice experience being in New York City to reconnect to the
reconnect,
earth.
Yeah, it's reconnecting them to the earth.
Mm-hmm.
It's awakening them.
Yeah.
And What's so funny? The majority of people are starting to grow organic because organic fruits and vegetables cost too much.
Right. So they're taking control of that too, where they're growing it and they're starting their little gardens and getting their organic seeds and making sure your seeds are organic. And they're doing it themselves, and they're realizing it's not as hard as they thought. And you appreciate the earth, and you appreciate what you eat, and you appreciate family a whole lot more, and health a whole lot more when you do it yourself, and community a whole lot more when you do it yourself.
And the majority of these people that are growing, like I was talking about earlier, the influx of people that really are wanting to grow, after the initial talk that I have with them, you know, they're really gung-ho. But they also, everyone is saying that, you know, well, when I do grow, you know, it's for my family, but, what, you know, I'm going to have, you know, I'm not going to be able to eat everything,
right.
So I'm going to give some away. So at least people are mindful of the concept of sharing with one's neighbor to a large degree. So that is the whole trend.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about urban farms and gardens. Local micro food systems. I am prophesizing something. I'm about to say that local micro food systems are going to be in people's houses,
yeah.
Meaning that in communities, in structures and buildings, people are going to
mm-hmm.
be growing food in their apartments and stuff. And
right.
What's going to happen is that these people are going to come together like a coalition, and they are going to use their power of the people to
right.
a large degree
right.
to leverage and to be able to self-sustain themselves to a large degree
right.
and to feed their community. Or, you know, hey, why not? Why not be like America? Why not ship some of this stuff out to
and
the
take
country?
Control of your food and what goes in your body is very important. Now, with that being said, both proponents and critics of local food systems warn that they can lead to narrow, inward-looking attitudes or local food patriotism, and the price premiums and local food cultures can be elitist and exclusive. That is true to a degree. That is why we're ultra-grassroots, and we don't get into all of that, personally. I mean, we was meant to do what we're doing, and we will continue to do it. And we do it sincerely from the heart, and, you know, we take pride in what we do. And, you know, I mean, as being chefs, I mean, farm to table is not that far-fetched. As chefs, we always knew and understood that the fresher the better, the taste, the concept, the presentation.
Overall presentation.
All those things must be palatable for one to appreciate what they're eating. So it wasn't, you know, for us, it was
a no-brainer.
It was a no-brainer. But nevertheless, examples of local food systems include community-supported agriculture programs, farmers markets, and farm school programs. They have been associated with the 100-mile diet and low-carbon diet, as well as the food sovereignty movement and slow food movement. Various forms of urban agriculture locate food production in densely populated areas not traditionally associated with farming, like the Rockaways. Garden sharing, where urban and suburban homeowners offer land access to food growers in exchange for a share of the harvest, is a relatively new trend at the extreme end of direct local food production. Now, organic food systems, this is what we do. Organic food systems are characterized by a reduced dependence on chemical inputs and an increased concern for transparency and information. Organic produce is grown without the chemical pesticides and fertilizers of industrial food systems, and livestock is reared without the use of antibiotics or growth hormones. That's why a lot of times people are interested in going to upstate or to rural or more rural areas
of the country
to buy their to make that connection with those organic farmers, because the food is just a lot better. There's a lot more care. There's no chemicals. There's no pesticides in those type of products, as opposed to going to a store where everything's just very mechanical and processed. So people.
Not to cut you off.
Mm-hmm.
There's something else too. The definition of organic doesn't necessarily mean without the use of chemical pesticide.
Right.
So this is another thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they say organic, the government they said that usually organic can consist of maybe 4 to 6 different mixtures of chemicals,
mm-hmm.
and it can still be organic. But it's just not as many chemicals. It's not the 24 and the 12 and all of that stuff. But my whole thing is that chemical-free is the way.
Absolutely.
Chemical-free is the way.
When it comes to your health?
You know,
I couldn't advocate that anymore.
I just, you know, not even that. I just don't understand. I really, truly, I know I do understand, but I don't, let me say it like this. Let me get my audience, my listeners to listen to this and to see what they think.
Mm-hmm.
As a father, I would not knowingly poison my children. I do not care. There are so many organic ways that you can grow stuff without using chemicals.
Right.
But it's all about money. I would not willingly poison my family. I would not use chemicals. My whole thing. On anyone else either. But if I'm saying I wouldn't do it to my, but yeah, I, you know, you have to be precise and accurate to a large degree. But if I'm saying to you that I wouldn't use chemicals to poison my family, oh, you best believe that I'm not going to use chemicals to poison no one at all. Because of the simple fact, my family eats fruits and vegetables that we
all
grow.
The time.
So, I mean, if it's not on our farm that we're growing in, I grow in the house. There's a lot of people that know us like that. I grow watermelon in my bedroom. I mean, I got lights and hot headlamps and all of these things. So I grow coffee, sativa, black coffee, black tea, all of these things. So my thing is that we grow. If we're not, we grow year round. If we're not growing on the farm, we're growing out.
Mm-hmm.
So,
especially with the fish.
Yes, well, our house is nursery, so that's just what it is. It's sanctuary nursery. But, you know, like I said, with that being said, if I could not, consciously, knowing that I am growing something that is contaminated, I could never do that. Again, like I told you, I have children and I have a family. I wouldn't do that, and I wouldn't want that bad karma on to come back to me by providing fruits and vegetables that would harm or that would in any way affect the health of anyone in my community. My father was a staunch believer and a supporter of organic produce, and that's what he grew, organic produce. You know, he picked a little cotton and some tobacco, too, but that's another story. But
right.
The fruits and vegetables, you know, it is important.
The organically grown is the way to go. I mean, there's nothing to add or take away from that. I mean, the AgriCorps, it's ridiculous.
It is. See, what they want... See, organically grown, you might be able to, certain fruits, certain plants, you might be able to get like maybe, let's just say 12.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be able to get 12 fruits off of one plant,
right,
organically. But because money is in play, the thing is that they want to put these plants on, steroids. So that instead of getting 12, they want 24. Yeah, they get 124. They want, that's what they want.
Mass production.
But see, you're losing something in the translation.
Mm-hmm.
You're losing something. You're losing everything. Because now this fruit is not right because he's all hyped up and, you know, he lost some of his savor. He lost some of his flavor to a large degree. So the thing is, again, it is important on how you grow, but you can grow organically too. You can grow organically and come out with big produce. With more nutrients inside of the produce,
mm-hmm,
done correctly. The thing is, like I said, the agro companies could be doing it too, but it's all about money. And I'm gonna be. What's so funny is that they, you know, using hundreds of millions of dollars, and they really don't even have to use all of that to a large degree.
Right.
But, you know, hey, If I spend $3 million, $5 million on a plant over a period of time, I want a return on my investment. But if you've done it organically.
At the expense of what? The public?
Well, Chef, we already know.
You already know.
It's been played out long before we came into this.
Right.
World.
I know.
To a large degree, but.
But
it's unfortunate.
I know, but you know, with that being said, the reduced inputs of organic agriculture can also lead to greater reliance on local knowledge, creating a stronger knowledge community amongst farmers, which is one of the best ways to a food system where everybody's on the same page and grow accordingly. Now, the transparency of food information is vital for organic food systems as a means through which consumers are able to identify organic food. As a result, a variety of certification bodies have emerged in organic food systems that set the standards for organic identification. Organic agriculture is promoted for the ecological benefits of reduced chemical application, the health benefits of lower chemical consumption, the economic benefits that accrue to farmers through a price premium, and the social benefits of increased transparency in the food system. Like local food systems, organic food systems have been criticized for being elitist and inaccessible, but that is slowly changing. And that's why micro-local food systems like community gardens and urban farms in an urban metropolitan area is increasing and it's becoming more popular and it's making more sense as not just for the bottom dollar, but why would you want to eat far away when you could eat close by to your house? I mean, if you want to think in layman's terms, you know, that, you know, support your local farmers, your urban farmers, your farmer stands, your farmer's markets, your CSAs, your cooperatives, all those things need to not only have an increase in knowledge for the public that particular organization or whether it's a for-profit or non-for-profit that's dealing in that arena, marketing and advertising, you know, is essential and needs to increase. Now, what critics have also suggested that organic agriculture has been conventionalized such that it mimics industrial food systems while using pesticides and fertilizers that are organically derived. Now, cooperatives and food systems. Now, cooperatives is historically one of the best ways to get organic produce and products. And what's the thing about cooperatives is depending on the cooperative, there's such a large variety of things to the point where now with the trend growing so much and it being such an important, impactful way of life. I mean, you could be in a cooperative, a real good cooperative, and there are some in New York City and across the country that are really big and have over 100-plus members. You can get everything from detergent, organic detergent, to your food and everything in between. I mean, even organic clothes. I mean, people really, you know, you could go as far as you want to go with it and be as creative as you want to be with your cooperative, should you decide to do a cooperative. There's so many ways of reaching the community and getting your point across and just making that impact that you want to make. It's incredible. Now, cooperatives can exist both at the farmer end of production and the consumer end. Farming cooperatives refer to arrangements where farmers pool resources either to cultivate their crops or get their crops to market. Now, consumer cooperatives often refer to food cooperatives where members buy a share in the store, as I just stated before. Cooperative grocery stores, unlike corporate grocery stores, are socially owned and community-based, remember, and thus surpluses cannot be taken from the store as profit. As a result, food co-ops do not work for profit, potentially keeping prices more cost representative. Other forms of cooperatives that have developed more recently include community-supported agriculture programs. Culinary Kids had a community-supported agriculture program for roughly 3 years. It was successful. What happened was Hurricane Irene and Hurricane Sandy, and the last one we did about three years ago, was kind of cut short because of Irene. So once Irene hits, the environment, the impact of the environment is very crucial to any farmer, whether you're upstate or whether you're in an urban setting such as ourselves. You know, once the environment gets impacted, it just pushes you back so far, and, you know, it's not easy to rebound. So we personally stopped doing it, but we will eventually start doing that again, you know, for the community. Where community members buy a share in a farm's harvest and may also be engaged in farm labor, operating at both the consumer and producer end of the food systems. Like, for instance, when we had our community-supported agriculture program, what we did was not only did they buy a share, but they gave a couple of hours of their time to volunteer in our community garden, in our urban farm, to get a sense of what we do and how we do it. And they can see where their food is coming from,
and
even more so.
No chemicals used.
Right. And see the cultivation of the food.
And no bugs.
No bugs or anything like that. So, you know, getting in touch with that, with the earth, is extremely, extremely important. Garden sharing pairs, individual landowners and food growers, while variations on this approach, organize groups of food gardeners for mutual assistance. The benefits of cooperatives are largely in the redistribution of risk and responsibility. Example, for farming cooperatives that share resources, the burden of investment is dispersed to all members rather than being concentrated in a single individual. A criticism of cooperatives is that reduced competition can reduce efficiency. I mean, that depends on the cooperative. I've seen, you know, really huge cooperatives run really, really well. And I've seen large ones that wasn't as well run as it should have been, but it's just a personal choice. Each one teach one, and everyone has their own way of doing what they want to do and promoting what they're promoting, what to promote. But, you know, these are the things that are different ways and trends and that are growing in the United States, which is good, and in New York City. Rockaways being one of the last rural
Sebastians,
and, you know, large green spaces in New York City, charge and take control and want to make that impact and using, you know, green initiatives and green works in agriculture and, you know, environmental food justice, food security. And I want to say this before we go to the break. Now, food security and food justice, two different things, but they both are parallel to each other.
I'm sure you're right. But, you know, there's some people, and, you know, I heard, I forgot where it was, someone was saying that they were doing food, what was that, food security or food justice?
Yeah, food security.
And, no, they were saying food justice.
Food justice, right.
But, see, people, the terminology, they get it confused. What this individual was actually saying he was doing is food justice. He classified what he was doing as foods. What was it? Food security?
Yeah.
Right. It was basically food justice. But that's like goes back to what I've said a couple of times. You know, you get 10 people in the room and ask them the definition of a word, you're going to get 10 different answers to a large degree. So it's very important that we adhere to what these terminologies and what these definitions mean to a large degree.
Now, food security, very simple. Food security, if you're doing a farmer's market, if you're doing community gardening, if you're doing a cooperative, those are different types of food security where not only are you securing what the community needs are, but you're securing the community outreach that you need to do and to keep that going continuously. So that's food security. Now, food justice is different. Food justice deals primarily with advocacy of policies for the food movement, period.
Period.
Now, if you want to get into the legal, the logistics and the legalities of food production, that's food justice. Making local organic food accessible to the community and advocating for that to the political sector, that's food justice. Parallel, and one cannot deal without the other, and they both meet at the end of the crossroads. So
yes.
With that being said, we're going to go on our break. Now, for further information on Culinary Kids Culinary Arts Initiative's programming for the season of 2014, you can email us at culinarykidscsa@yahoo.com. That's culinarykidscsa@yahoo.com. Now, our website is www.culinarykidsdaycamp.org. That's www.culinarykidsdaycamp.org. If you want to donate, thank you for our donors.
Culinary Kids, Charlie Sam Alpha, CSA@yahoo.com.
And now you can go on our website and donate too. So you would go to Culinary Kids, www.culinarykidsdaycamp.org/donate. That's www.culinarykidsdaycamp.org/donate. Now you want to get us on Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff. Facebook, it's Culinary Kids Day Camp. That's our name. And on Twitter, it's @culinary_kids. So we're going on our break.
And we'll be back.
I got a million ways to get it. Choose one. Hey, bring it back. Now double your money and make it stack. I'm on to the next one.
Niggas like how come, niggas want my old shit, buy my old album, niggas stuck on stupid, I gotta keep it moving, niggas make the same shit, me I make the blueprint, came in the range, hopped out the Lexus, every year since, I've been on that next shit, traded in a gold for the platinum Rolex, now a nigga wrist match the status of my records. Used to rock a throwback, ballin' on a corner. Now I rock a telesuit, looking like a owner. No, I'm not a Jonas, brother, I'm a groaner. No, I'm not a virgin, I use my cojones. I move onward, the only direction. Can't be scared to fail, search of perfection. Gotta keep it fresh, girl, even when we sexin'. But don't be mad at him when it's on to the next one.
Somebody bring me back the money, please. I got a million ways to get it. Choose one. Hey, bring it back. Now double your money and make it stack. I'm on to the next one.
Sold back jersey cause we on to the next one. And fuck that auto-tune cause we on. And niggas don't be mad cause it's all about progression. Loiterers should be arrested. I used to drink Cristal, them fuckers racist. So I switched gold bottles on to that stage shit. You gon' have another drink or you just gon' babysit. On to the next one, somebody call a waitress. Baby, I'm a boss, I don't know what they do. I don't get drops, I drop the label. World can't hold me, too much ambition. Always knew it'd be like this when I was in the kitchen. Niggas in the same spot, me I'm dodging raindrops. Meaning I'm on vacay, chillin' on the big job. Yeah, I got on flip-flops, white Louis Vuitton shoes. Y'all should grow the fuck up, come here, let me coach you. Hold up.
Somebody bring me back the money, please.
Hey.
I got a million ways to get it. Choose one. Hey, bring it back. Double your money and make it stack. I'm on to the next one.
I'm on to the next.
Somebody bring me back the money, please.
Big pimpin' in the house. Bought the land, tore the motherfucking house down. Bought the car, tore the motherfucking roof off. Ride clean, I don't never take the shoes off. Bought the Jeep, tore the motherfucking doors off. Foot out that bitch, ride the shit like a skateboard. Navigation on, trying to find my next thrill. Feeling myself, I don't even need an X-pill. Can't chill, but my neck will. Haters really gonna be mad off my next bill. I don't know why they worry about my pockets. Meanwhile, I had over chilling in the projects. Had out in Bed-Stuy, chilling on the steps, drinking quarter waters. I gotta be the best. MJ a summer jam, Obama on the text. Y'all should be afraid of what I'm gonna do next. Hold up.
Somebody bring me back the money, please. I got a million ways to get it. Choose one. Hey, bring it back, bring it back. Now double your money and make it stack. I'm on to the next one. On to the next. I'm on to the next. On to the next. I'm on to the next. On to the next. I'm on to the next. On to the next. On to the next.
Hold up.
Somebody bring me back the money, please.
Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team fucking here. Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here. Nigga, started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team here. Nigga, started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team fucking here. I done kept it real from the jump. Living at my mama's house, we'd argue every month, nigga. I was trying to get it on my own. Working all night, traffic on the way home. And my uncle calling me like, where you at? I gave you the keys, so you bring it right back, nigga. I just think it's funny how it goes. Now I'm on the road, half a million for a show. And we started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team fucking here. Started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here, nigga. Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team fucking here. Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here, nigga. What's up, stories about the man? Say I never struggled, wasn't hungry, yeah, I doubt it, nigga. I could turn your boy into the man. There ain't really much out here that's popping off without us, nigga. We just want the credit where it's due. I'ma worry about me, give a fuck about you, nigga. Just as a reminder to myself, I wear every single chain, even when I'm in the house. Cause we started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team fucking here. Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here, nigga. No new niggas, nigga, we don't feel that. Fuck a fake friend, where your real friends at? We don't like to do too much explaining. Story stay the same, I never changed it. No new niggas, nigga, we don't feel that. Fuck a fake friend, where your real friends at? We don't like to do too much explaining. Story stay the same through the money and the fame. Cause we started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team fucking here. Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here, nigga. Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team here, nigga. Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here, nigga.
I'ma tell you a story and I come out bluntly. Born an ugly child, ain't nobody would want me. I used to walk around and get upset and upsetter, till I figured out ways to make myself look better. As I got older, my awareness expanded. I met this beautiful girl and my wish was commanded. Didn't hang with the fellas, so they started getting shady. I'd always be my girl and y'all could call her my lady. I loved her a lot, word up, not going to front. See, the problem that aroused me, why on earth did she want me? Couldn't figure it out, and to make things worse, I was cursed with this woman of not being the first. And the first was this fly guy, made me very jealous. Always think she cheated on me and thought the other fellas. Two wrongs will make a right, but any time we would fight, I would kindly pick up the phone and call a girl out of spite. I shouldn't have done it. I'm feeling sad and I'm feeling sad and I'm feeling sad. So direct, it was admiring. Trying to stop my love, but no, my love was not retiring. To catch her in a lie was near impossible and tricky. Didn't want her in certain clothes, getting really picky. We got into it again, this time she got too bright. So me, preventing a fight, I just stayed out for the night. I had to ease up off the pressure, all this heartache pain. So I went off to the park with Omega Vance and Dane. This girl came over, she was trucked down excessive. Started talking to me and she was popping quite aggressive. A pretty young thing, she didn't strike me as no hoe. So weak minded, rigged the ruler, went on with the flow. My joint was getting hard, why without me even knowing? We sat back to my van and I could feel her for her growing. The girl took off her coat, her body was no joke. Well, I rubbed it to her zipping and I went for broke. I shouldn't have done it. I'm feeling sad. I'm feeling sad. Now I've sinned and there's no one to blame. The night when I was home, I felt real guilty and ashamed. Snuck right into bed, felt just like a shady fella. What made me so offensive? How am I ever gonna tell her? Shouldn't have cheated just because we'd always shout. Endurance, be a man, that's what I had to learn about. Now me, I guess I like this one, the secrets that I hid. I figured I'll patch things up and then I tell her what I did. Then after that night, she started acting heaven sent. I found a house spotless and she helped out with the rent. So I wrote the ring, it was a good 20 carat. Then word got back about me chilling at the parrot. So when I got home, I thought she'd just be out to roast. Instead, I found a sweater and I found an overdose. It's bad of it for you, but I guess you didn't care. All this winning happened because of me and my affair. Shouldn't have done it. I'm feeling sad and
relate. your upper wall. Staring at your dome piece, very strong. Stronger than pride, stronger than Teflon. Take it on the app and you buy me links. Now I want a pound of food thing until it stinks. You could be my mama and I'll be your boy.
Original rude boy, never am I coy. You could be a shorty in my ill convoy. Not to come across as a thug or a hood. But hun, you got the goods like Madeline Wood. By the way, my name's Malik, the 5 foot freak. They say we get together by the end of the week. She simply said no, label me a hoe. I said, how you figure? My friends tell me so. I hate when silly groupies wanna run their yap. Word to God, hun, I don't get down like that.
I'll have you weak in the knees that you can hardly speak. Or we could do like Uncle Ella swinging F in my Jeep. Keep it on the down, yo, we keep it discreet. See, I'm not the type of kid to have my biz in the street.
If my mom don't approve, then I'll just be low. Let me take the little man from inside the boat. Let me hit it from the back, girl, I won't catch a hernia. Bust off on your couch, now you got demon furniture.
Shy, he fight for the extra P. Stacey Beetle, PJ, and my man LG. They know the abstract is really so on ice. The character is a man, never ever a mic. Shorty, let me tell you about my only vice. It has to do with lots of loving, and it ain't nothing nice. It ain't a night. It ain't a night.
Let yourself, girl, keep set to him.
Guys, to continue on the discussion of microfood systems,
local microfood systems
and its trade, the next topic I wanted to talk about was fair trade. Now, fair trade has emerged in global food systems to create a greater balance between the price of food and the cost of producing it. It is defined largely by more direct trading systems, whereby producers have greater control over the conditions of trade and garner a greater fraction of the sale price. The main goal of fair trade is to change international commercial relations in such a way that disadvantaged producers can increase their control over their own future, have a fair and just return for their work, continuity of income, and decent working and living conditions for sustainable development. Like organic food systems, fair trade relies on transparency and the flow of information. Well-known examples are fair trade commodities of coffee and cocoa. And there's also fair trade commodities of tea and certain fruits, too. So fair trade is very, 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 very political, and it's political internationally.
That's why it should be called political trade.
You know, the UN has, you know, part with it. Governments around the world definitely have an input in it, and that's where the policies and the political embattlement sometimes takes place. But like I said, for the fair trade commodities, the three main ones are tea, coffee, and cocoa. So, you know, there's so much to it, and you know what as culinary kids, what we've tried to do is simplify all of this bureaucratic stuff and get a good product out there to the community. Not to say that nobody else does, but from our personal experience as urban farmers and community activists and ultra grassroots folks, we've taken the knowledge that we were blessed with. and utilized it in a way and done our best to simplify the whole, you know, the whole organic
food movement, growth and growing up the produce that we do grow. We take our time.
Yep.
And what's so funny is, believe it or not, the majority of our fruits and vegetables come up early.
Yeah.
We really, a lot of the times we're up and running before a lot of other people to a large degree.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not taken away from anybody else, because
right.
everyone else in this food
that
movement, right, but everyone in this food movement is important. Regardless of, you know,
how big or small,
or political or non-political you are.
And if you're non-political, it's okay too.
Actually, it's better, but let's not go there. Let's not go there. Let's not open that Pandora's box over there. Yeah, but again, it is, and oh yeah, for certain listeners that's out there, hey, listen up. But, again, like I said, it's all about transparency. But Chef is going to get into that in a second. But I just, again, it's just, I can never stress enough how, you know, how important this is. It really, and you have to be, you have to want to do this. And there's a lot of people that do want to do it. And the thing is to keep momentum. I definitely got some listeners out there. Hey, Michelle. Hey, Barbara. Hey, Viv. How y'all doing? Charles, Chauncey, Leroy, Benita, Davina, Sabrina.
Mary.
Oh, yeah. So many people, you know, like I said.
Austin,
without question. Nettie, her husband, and so many other people, but... Like I said, the thing is that I love these people. So many other people that didn't, you know, put your names
That's
out
right.
there.
It's
but
too
we,
many.
It's too many. We love you all. Joe's, Josie Ledger, you know, everybody. I have to give a shout out to my partner, Raymond Gonzalez, and Arthur Morris.
And Rocky Rock,
hey. But like I said, it's so important and imperative. And these are people that grow, you know, they eat organic produce, and they love the organic produce that we supply them. So again, I want to try to change everybody. A lot of people, I don't have a green thumb. I can't grow anything, Chef.
It takes time,
and it takes your patience and a commitment to doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how can I say, a meticulous, tedious order
mm-hmm.
has to be done, you know, repetitiously. Yeah. So, but, again, I'm going to let Chef take it over with transparency.
Now, transparency within food systems refers to full disclosure of information about rules, procedures, and practices at all levels within a food production and supply chain.
Practices meaning, are there chemists, are there chemicals being utilized?
Is it organic? Basically, if it's organic or non-organic practice. Transparency ensures that consumers have detailed information about production of a given food item. Traceability, by contrast, is the ability to trace to their origins all components in a food production and marketing chain, whether processed or unprocessed, meat, vegetables, foods. Two concerns about transparency and traceability have been heightened with food safety scares, such as the bovine spongiform encephalopathy. And E. coli, but not exclusively refer to food safety. Transparency is also important in identifying food issues that possess extrinsic qualities that do not affect the nature of the food per se, but affect its production, such as animal welfare, social justice issues, and environmental concerns. Now, one of the primary ways transparency is achieved is through certification and or use of food labels. In the U.S., some certifications originate in the public sector, such as the USDA. And the United States Department of Agriculture has its own organic label. Others have their own origin in private sector certifications, i.e. humanely raised, certified humane. There are also labels which do not rely on certification, such as the USDA's country of origin label. Check that out.
Cool.
Participation in local food systems, such as community supported agriculture programs, CSAs for short, farmers markets, food cooperatives, and farmer cooperatives also enhances transparency, and there are diverse programs promoting purchase of locally grown and marketed foods. Now, the number one label for transparency in the United States is the organic label.
Get it's a big circle, white on the bottom, white on the top, green on the bottom, and it, on the white part it says USDA, and on the green part it says organic.
Now, to be USDA organic, I remember there was a time you didn't even have to pay to become USDA organic when it first
certified,
started.
Certified
organic, correct. It just, to be labeled like that, it just enhances your product, and it gives a huge trust factor to the consumer that you took the time out to, number one, be organic, and number two, to be certified organic. So it goes hand in hand, and it's a great marketing tool, too, to become USDA organic. Now, the second one is fair trade. Like I was saying to you before, the three main trade communities are the coffee, the tea. Now, fair trade, right. Now, fair trade indicates that the product has been grown and marketed in accordance with fair trade standards. This is an independent certification awarded by FloCert and overseen by Flo International. Major food items that are marketed under fair trade are coffee, tea, and chocolate. Like I said, many items other than food are sold with a fair trade label. Now, Food Alliance certified. Food Alliance is a nonprofit organization that certifies farms, ranches, and food processors and distributors for safe and fair working conditions, humane treatment of animals, and good environmental stewardship. Now, there's a lot of stuff, like when you go on the Whole Foods or any, like a big farmer's market like the one in 14th Street, like in New York City, this is the biggest green market, farmer's market set up, and it's been around for decades. And local farmers come and, you know, bring their produce and stuff like that. With the manufacturing product of organic, the organic manufactured product, two labels that usually are on a lot of the stuff that we see in these grocery stores, these specialty stores, these organic stores, these farmers markets, stands and markets, are the USDA Organic and the Food Alliance Certified label. And I think that the more labels that it has, the better it is a product, because the grower, the organic grower, really, really takes his or her endeavor ultra seriously and wants to put the best product forward and as healthy and nutritious as possible to each person. So those are the two main ones that really, really are on a lot of these bottles. I mean, you can look at your bottles like the organic beer. I mean, not the beer, but the organic sodas, the organic butters, the organic juices. A lot of them got like three or four different labels from three or four different certified organizations.
Right.
So look at your label. I mean, it's there for a reason. I mean, I look at my label. I mean, being a chef, of course, you're going to scrutinize every little thing because, you know, you're a reflection of the food that you serve.
Clean over attentively.
Right. So, you know, as a chef, you're going to double check, triple check. It's just a normal mechanism that triggers off when you're dealing with food professionally.
Measure 12 times, cut once.
Exactly. So, you know, we double check and triple check. And the labels really make an impact on that purchase. And I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one that feels like that. Now, the country of origin. Country of origin, the label was created by an enactment of the 2002 Farm Bill. The Department of Agriculture is responsible for its implementation, which began the 30th of September, 2008. Now, the bill mandates country of origin labeling for several products, especially meat, beef, lamb, pork, fish, and chicken, perishable agricultural commodities, and some nuts. USDA rules provide specifics as to documentation, timetables, and definitions. There is not one specific label to indicate the country of origin. They will vary by country. It's very important to know where your meat is coming from, especially, because what tends to happen is the strict guidelines that the United States has implemented on its own behalf, a lot of these countries do not do that.
Their standards are different.
Their standards are completely different, and their guidelines are completely different. So it behooves you as a consumer to take these into account and to pay attention and close attention to what we're saying and to expound on it at your own time, at your own leisure, and do your own research to see the importance of these different labels. Now, American Humane Certified, this certification is provided by the American Humane Association and ensures that farm animals are raised according to welfare standards that provide for adequate housing, feed, health care, and behavior expression. Now, antibiotics are not used except for therapeutic reasons. Growth promoters are not used. Other issues, including transport, processing, and biosecurity, are addressed as well. Species covered are poultry, cattle, and swine. So, you know, it's like a pyramid. It's like when they say food chain, they really mean it.
Lips that touch swine shall never touch mine.
The last but not least is the certified humane raised and handled. This is a very strict label, to be honest, this one especially. This label ensures that production meets the Humane Farm Animal Care Program standards, which address housing, diet, excluding routine use of hormones or antibiotics, and natural behavior. Because as you already know, hormones and stuff like that can hamper the natural behavior of the animal, which in turn...
It can give you cancer.
It can give you cancer and Lord knows what else. And the thing about dealing with animals and the slaughter of animals, there's a certain way to take care of your animals.
There's a certain way to slaughter.
In a humane way. And there's a certain way to slaughter your animals in a humane way. But that's another show.
Ain't nothing like a fresh cow.
Yep.
Yes, indeed.
Fresh slaughtered cow.
Yes, indeed.
Because I'm going to say this and I'm going to move on. You know, when you're slaughtering an animal, and we as chefs have been trained and taught about this too, the way it's slaughtered, it affects the way it tastes.
Yes, indeed.
And it also affects the texture
of the meat.
And it also, believe it or not, it affects the absorption of the seasoning that you add to create an enhanced experience when you're cooking that meat. So
it can affect it to a degree where if it's not killed correctly,
right,
the marbling of the meat,
right,
the texture and the color will be off.
Yeah.
It's like I said, it's a way to do. You just can't kill an animal and that's it. You know, the muscles tighten up, tense up, then it's a whole lot. It's a lot to it. It really
right.
truly is.
I mean, like the AgriCorps, slaughterhouses that are in this country, I can't speak for anywhere else, but in this country, some do it organically and humane and others don't. Now, when you're slaughtering an animal in this country, it has, by law, has to go through a USDA slaughterhouse. And, there's always guidelines that you can look up that deal with that situation, but there are ones that deal with it in an organic and a humane, more humane way than the more commercial. So, you know, if you should decide to want to get into meat production, that's something to take in consideration even more so. But additionally, producers must comply with food safety and environment protection regulations. They must meet standards set by the American Meat Institute that are more stringent than those laid out in the Federal Humane Slaughter Act. Certification has been applied to beef, poultry, and eggs, pork, lamb, goat, turkey, veal, dairy products, and even wool.
Yeah, so this is all, everything that we were dealing with is all information that you should, that we feel you should know,
mm-hmm.
dealing and pertaining to local micro food systems. But one of the most important parts and aspects of any micro food system would be
mm-hmm.
the acquisition of land. But I'm gonna say this to you: it's very important
mm-hmm.
To consider several factors when choosing where to invest time and energy, money, and other resources into a farm. Right? There are several organizations that have taken interest in issues unfarmed or monocropped land as it relates to landless individuals. So if you are interested in farming organically and selling to local markets before selecting seeds and selling land, there are several considerations to keep in mind. There is the consideration of a water source for the entire growing season. You also must evaluate where you will, you know, situate your planting beds, rows, and relation to the sun. It's important to maximize the southern exposure from the sun. Evaluating the potential shade from trees and buildings at different times of the year and different times of the day. Considering how to orient your growing area along the north-south axis in order to maximize sun exposure.
Right.
You know, consider pruning or removing trees from the south side of your grow site.
Right.
That's definitely a factor. It depends on if you are, you know, if you're doing something like a shaded crop, strawberries, you know, something like that. If you're doing, like, shaded crops, it's different.
Right.
You have to also, you should consider your growing area. How long should your beds and rows be? How wide? Everybody's different. But I would say my suggestion is about maybe 5 feet wide.
Mm-hmm.
About, you know, people go 4, but I would say 5 feet wide because from either side of the bed, you can access the middle portion of the box, of the raised bed. So I would say 5 feet wide, and, you know, everybody's different. If you have to, you have to use the available space that you have. If you don't have 5 feet, you have, you know, according to your space, you have to make it up. So if you're using drip tape, you must limit the length of your bed in accordance with the PSIs.
Mm-hmm.
That's water per square inch of your drip tape so that there's enough pressure in the line to admit water and not so much that the pressure will blow out the lines. Sure, is the area where you plan to grow? You know, is there a fence? Is it intact, you know, secure? Is there a locked door, gate that keeps people, pets, wildlife out of the, you know, out of the field or out of the garden or out of the land that you're on? Are there any visible risks, and you know, if you have employees or produce on the site? And another thing, what hours is the land accessible? What are the access times? It depends, you know, if you have a, it depends. Mm-hmm. If you're working, you know, people go about this differently as a part of land acquiescence. So to acquiesce some land, some people deal with the private land owners, and some people deal with other organizations that acquiesce land for them.
Right. That too.
And, you know, it is the land. Sometimes landowners permit activities on the field. You know, I would say, I'm going to go into soil. I would say, soil health is also mm-hmm. one of the most important factors in determining a growth site.
Right.
A basic soil test, will give you an idea of the health of the soil.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, it's important that you, these are several things that you have to identify before you start wanting to grow. And, you know, I'm going to say this to you, you know, sometimes a lot of people want to give you a little bit of information pertaining to something small.
Right.
But the thing is that, you know, we all have big ideas, and sometimes, you know, it's good to start big.
Right.
And sometimes you're not really starting big.
Mm-hmm.
People think that you are starting big, but what you're doing is something that you know that you can handle and that you can take on. It's not a big thing. So it's all about your beliefs and your knowledge base of what you know. And, you know, I'm going to say this to you. Some people have a zero curve and they don't know anything. But some people have such a passion and a love, and I've seen that in a lot of our young adults and a lot of our young students. They have such a passion and a love for and a great deal of respect for what we do and what they do.
Right.
And they learn these you know, these trades and these things. As part of the local micro food system too, you know, we rely on our food system to produce the food we eat every day. Yet we don't always realize the complex web of relationships, regulations, and infrastructure that goes into the food system. The food system includes everything from food, produce, processing, and distribution to access consumption and waste recovery. Even though agriculture has become increasingly industrialized and globalized, this has been happening since World War II. Interest in local food systems, that is systems that produce food locally to meet local needs.
Right.
It has grown over the last couple of decades. There's no consensus for the definition of local, but some common definitions of local includes within 100 miles or within the state. But local, you know, sometimes, you know, you could be driving for hours, you know, just to get to one part of the state.
Mm-hmm.
So that is not really local. Even though it is in the state, local would be something that is close by. I would, you know, this is new, uncharted territory to a degree. You know, everybody is coming up with, you know, want to revisit and reword and, you know, oh, it's 50 miles, it's 100 miles, but one of the founding fathers of the food movement here in New York City, he told me that a locally grown would be within 100 miles, and I'm with what he said because, you know, he would know. But local food systems can improve access to fresh. fresh, healthy food. It can contribute to the local economy and reduce energy. Now, it can contribute to the local economy by hiring people within the community to work at the farmers market or the farm in general, and by reducing energy waste, that's dealing with the gas, carbon emissions, all of these things. If by having food grown in the locally in neighborhoods, what happens is it alleviates the transportation of trucks with produce going back and forth, transporting food to one destination to another. What we have is, for instance, California. It takes about 3 days to get there, drive.
Yep.
We have tractor trailers that are traversing from Cali to New York every day, all day, 24 hours a day, coming and bringing food, fresh fruits and vegetables to New York.
Right.
It's not just Cali, Wisconsin. You know, all over the United States, these foods are coming into the great metropolitan cities.
Yeah.
And they are finding their way here. But what happens is that locally, if we start growing locally, these trucks would actually not be moving as much.
Right.
But the downside to that would be the loss of jobs for a lot of tractor-trailer drivers. So the thing is to find a natural, harmonious balance to it all. It's unfortunate that this food movement is going to always utilize trucks and transportation to a large degree, because for the foreseeable future, trucks and they're still gonna exist, but we can cut this in half by everyone in every city growing locally. We would need these trucks, but hopefully that'll come soon. We're on the cusp of something great. We're at the beginning. We're on the ground level, meaning that in the next 30 years, no, let's say 25 years.
Probably less than that.
Yeah, less than, no, what I was going to say, in the next 25 years, our children will be taking over our not-for-profit organization. So by them doing that in the next 25 years, they'll be apt, and the scenery is going to be totally different. It's going to be changed. It's going to be a brave new world, so to speak. It's going to be a really brave new world. But the reduced energy waste and the environmental degradation. In addition, public demand for local food is at farmers markets and grocery stores and other institutions has grown, as well as community interest in food production at home or in community gardens. Consumers often associate local food with other characteristics such as environmental sustainable produce on the distribution. I think that the here's a little bit of trivia. The majority of local food production occurs on farms. Generally, we think of farming taking place in rural areas, but now listen to this. About 39% of U.S. farms are located in metropolitan areas.
Right.
Now, in Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
right, there are over 70,000 farms. 78,000 farms.
Amazing.
And 15 million acres of land in production. Now,
that's a lot.
Of those, most are commodity farms. crops, right? Now they're producing crops and livestock for trade in national and international markets.
Right.
But the most of it goes international,
mm-hmm.
Because there's more money involved. The exact number of local food farms or those farms serving the local food needs in Wisconsin, now check this out, it's unknown to a large degree, but they say it's about 5% of the farms, they report local food sales. 5% of farms.
Wow.
So, I would, 5%, 5% of 78, listen.
Okay.
As regional distributors, grocery stores, restaurants, and other retailers, right? Local food farmers are more likely to be smaller in size, family-owned, and located or near a metropolitan area. As a result, local food farms may uniquely experience the pressures of development because of their size. Local food farms can respond to local needs, but may be limited by scale. In addition, the producers are, they're a little younger and have more formal education. As demand for local food grows, the number and or size of local food farms may also need to grow to meet the demand. Many factors affect the types of produce that producers grow and raise, such as climate, soil, culture, and personal preferences, and markets and distributing networks. Many local food farms grow in wider varieties of produce than commodity farms. Commodity farmers, as you know, are grains and tea and all of that. Most local food farmers are vegetable, fruits, and nut farmers, with a smaller percentage of local food farmers producing other field crops and or livestock. Local food farms are designating themselves by selling niche produce, such as organics, heirloom plants, varieties, and animal breeds. This allows them to generate higher gross sales per acre from smaller farmers. For that reason, and that reason solely, some local food farmers may use less land than other types of farming. Most local food farms are located on private lands, though a small number of local food farms are operated by non-for-profits on public-owned land in the United States. So, in the United States and abroad, but I had many volunteers also have volunteer programs that grow food for people experiencing poverty, such as food pantries or church gardens or plant and grow for the hungry. These types of non-farm food productions on sites can be located on public or private land. For example, many schools are starting gardens for students, education on the farm to table in the cafeteria use. So this is another thing that Culinary Kids has been trying to, for a couple of years now. We've been trying to make schools more aware about having fruits and vegetables, growing fruits and vegetables, tying it in with earth science curriculum, but also using it as a vehicle and a tool for service-bound students, because now our children have to do community service to actually graduate now. So we do have a lot of children and young adults that come to get their to get their time in, so to speak, so that they can, you know, a certain amount of hours they have to, a certain amount of hours is required of them for community service.
Right.
So this is something that is a win-win situation. And then on top of that, the children in school can actually also be growing fruits and vegetables
right.
for their community. And this is, like I said, this is something
that...
You
couldn't ask for anything more.
Yeah, you couldn't ask for anything more, because now the children are giving this food locally to the food pantries. And,
right.
you know, listen, an idea is an idea. If it can be done in a way where it is
feasible?
No, not even feasible. I don't even want to say that because it has to be feasible.
Mm-hmm.
It is feasible because we are seed saving. So
right.
by doing these, by taking our time to do these things, we are actually allowing the community to be able to get fruits and vegetables from us organically for half the price that they would if they had to go to Whole Foods. Okay, shouldn't have threw the name out there like that, but okay, I did. Or any other big major retailer, so to speak, thing is you're going to pay high prices. That's not to say do not go to Whole Foods. Because I know I go to Whole Foods sometimes, so it's all right. If you're going to go. But, again, it is about the consideration of promoting local food production. You have to build relationships. Building relationships with food system partners in your community and in your region involved in local food production on farms and in your community. This may include like small to mid-sized producers, producer groups, non-for-profits, institutions. Determining the best way to engage partners on an ongoing basis to address the food production or needs such as though a food policy council or regular communication on or with appropriate staff. Gathering data is something production that is always data is always needed. People need to evaluate if what they are doing it's not even feasible. It's not even that it's feasible. In the for-profit, the whole idea is that, is it feasible? What are the feasibilities? But the whole object of a non-for-profit, and I do see some non-for-profits saying things like, is it feasible? But now the reason why non-for-profits talk like that and say, is it feasible, is because grants are given, but, you know, if you have to depend on grantors, that means you have to budget your money very wisely in order to do what you have to do. So data collection in the sense that's what's needed. Data collection from a non-for-profit, even though some non-for-profits, like I said, their bottom line is, you know, they're thinking about those things, and any good non-for-profit would do that
right.
because you have to have accountability and transparency with everything you do, all receipts, this, that, and the other, you know, all of these things. You have to be held accountable for these things because it's so unfair and it's so unfortunate that you have so many other non-for-profits that are, you know, doing things that they shouldn't be doing, but, you know, it is what it is. But the thing is to focus and concentrate on what you're doing. But you have to be aware of, you know, what's going on, and that's just what it is.
This was a great show.
This definitely was a great show, and I know for a fact a lot of my people were listening, and we really you know, we have this thing where we, you know, we have guests on, but ours is to we feel is to educate. And there's a lot of our tellers too. That's why they listen. That's why, you know, they really don't. They want to listen to what we're saying because they feel that what we're saying is really important, and also it is going to be able to sustain them when, how can I say it, when the proverbial shit hits the fan.
Yep.
You know, so with that being said, I am Chef Moses.
And I'm Chef Rivera. But before we close, one more plug.
Okay.
We have a store online called the Farm Rockaway Shop. It's another fundraising vehicle for the organization where you can go online and go into our shop and, you know, Chef Moses designed a whole bunch of cool-looking stuff.
Hey, happy salami of flip-flops. Hey, chuclapa.
So tons of stuff that was designed by culinary kid Chef Moses, of course. And check us out. It's at www.cafepress.com/farmrockaway.
Say it one more time.
That's www.cafepress.com/farmrockaway.
Say it one more again for me. Give it to him again.
One more time. www.cafepress.com/farmrockaway. And with that being said,
I'm Chef Moses for life in the house.
I'm Chef Rivera. It's Green Talk Live and More on It's Real Talk Radio with the Chef.
Have a good night.
Take it easy.
Love one another.
Thank you for tuning in to Green Talk Live and More with Chef Moses and Chef Rivera on It's Real Talk Radio. You can catch the chefs on Facebook at Culinary Kids Day Camp, on Twitter at Culinary_Kids, or on their official website, CulinaryKidsDayCamp.org. Listen to Green Talk Live and More every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time by dialing 347-838-9540 or by logging on to blogtalkradio.com/JRealTalk. It's Real Talk Radio. We're not just a brand. We're a family.